And now our speaker, our first speaker this morning, is Brother Tim Krupa of Portland, Oregon. And his subject is, I Thought I Heard a Murmur. Brother Tim.
Good morning. It's been a pleasure to share the first few days of convention with you. I consider it a great privilege to be here with you, and I count my fellowship with you as one of the greatest blessings of my Christian daily life. From the book of Exodus, and when they came to Marah, they could not drink the water, for they were bitter. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Again from Exodus. And all the congregation of Israel came unto the wilderness. And the whole congregation murmured against Moses and Aaron. Would to God we had died in Egypt. You have brought us forth to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Again from Exodus. And the people thirsted in Rephidim, and the people murmured against Moses. Thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst. From Numbers. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron. Would God we had died in the wilderness. Hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword? Again, from Numbers. And as he had made an end of speaking, the ground clave asunder. And the earth swallowed them up, all the men that appertained unto Korah. But on the morrow, all the children of Israel murmured against Moses, saying, you have killed the people of the Lord. Imagine, if you will, the sound of 2 million people murmuring. It was a sound that Jehovah did not like. The Israelites had been slaves for something like 200 years. They had been shown the greatest display of miracles ever seen. They had just received their freedom. They should have been a happy, thankful group of people. But they weren't. In a matter of days, weeks, they forgot the agonies of slavery. They weren't at all thankful for what the Lord had done for them. It made God feel bad. And he said to Moses in Exodus, the 16th chapter, verse 7. Moses speaks first. It says in the 7th verse, 16th chapter, and Moses said to the Israelites, in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he heareth your murmuring. Verse 8. Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. Now Numbers, the 14th chapter, verse 26. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmurs against me? That wasn't Moses speaking. That was the Lord speaking to Moses. Numbers 14, verse 29, the Lord continues, "Your carcasses shall fall in the wilderness, all which have murmured against me shall not come into the land." The Lord had heard every bit of it. He heard every murmur. He did not consider their repeated complaining just a trivial thing. None who murmured would enter the promised land. None. Murmuring and complaining can be a way of life, can be a habit. It was for Israel. It's a style. It's a behavior pattern. It's almost a conversational style. Maybe it's a way of thinking. In their defense, you might say, well, they were a nation of ex-slaves. They didn't know what freedom was all about. Maybe you could say, they had a lot to complain about. Apparently, in Jehovah's eyes and ears, it didn't matter. There was no excuse. He was not pleased. More than anything, it was such an incredible expression of unthankfulness. There was no gratitude there. They forgot. They were discontent. Murmuring is such a major characteristic of natural Israel. It's such a dominant characteristic. It played such a pivotal part in their salvation. I think more than anything, that's what kept them individually from going into the promised land. It's so dominant that the parallel to spiritual Israel is inescapable. Brethren, we were slaves too. We used to live in the great land of Egypt. We have been given our freedom. A justified man has much to be thankful for. As liberated slaves, we have a responsibility to use our freedom properly and not to complain about almost everything. Galatians 5:13 says, "Don't use your liberty as an occasion to the flesh." Galatians 5:13. The Living Bible says, "You have been given freedom. Freedom not to do wrong, but freedom to love and serve one another." Philip, verse 15, same chapter, Galatians 5. "If freedom merely means that you are free to attack and tear each other to pieces, be careful. You may destroy your fellowship altogether." So, what concepts are we talking about this morning? Talking about murmuring, complaining. We're talking about thankfulness versus unthankfulness. We're talking about contentment versus discontentment. We're talking about being happy Christians versus unhappy. This applies to the words we speak. It applies to the deeds we do. And it even applies to the expressions on our faces. And we come to the unmistakable conclusion. A spiritual Israelite cannot fill his life with murmuring and complaining and still make it to the promised land. I think implied in this lesson is that if there are things that need to be corrected, if there's hunger, if there's thirst, if there's a problem with the leadership, there are ways of approaching the problem in an acceptable manner. There are steps and methods that are acceptable to God. Israel failed to come up with any of them. And most of all, the lesson is that murmuring is not one of the acceptable methods. Where does the problem start? Well, the root of complaining is dissatisfaction. You know, there is no way a satisfied customer complains. And there's a step that follows. The dissatisfaction leads to a continued complaining. The complaining leads to an unrest, the feeling of unrest. The feeling of unrest leads to the desire to do something about it. And we call that ambition. Ambition leads to wanting to take action. And an untoward action leads to rebellion. You know, that was the step that Lucifer went through. He was dissatisfied. He thought of taking some action. He had ambition. And it eventually led him to rebellion with God. He was dissatisfied with the way things were. Not long ago, they studied a group of rich people. They said, you know, we can understand why the poor people are unhappy. So he says, let's do a study of the rich. Let's see what are the details. What makes them happy? Surprise! They found out that as a group, rich people weren't happy. So they said, well, you know, the work situation, the environment, that's really important. And we can really understand why an unemployed person is unhappy. So he said, let's go and study the people that have the best job and see what makes them happy. Surprise. The people that had the best jobs in the country, guess what? They weren't happy. So they said, let's look at marriage. They said, we can understand why people who are married are unhappy. No, maybe I got that backwards. We can understand why people who are unmarried aren't. It doesn't matter. It didn't matter. It didn't matter what group they looked at. Rich, poor, the best job, the married, the unmarried. They couldn't find a group that was happy, that was satisfied. What is it that's in the mind of the complainer? I found a really interesting study done by a worldly group on complaining. Now, you may say, why would a worldly group be interested in people who complain? Well, they explain that they are very interested because they said one complainer can affect an entire office. They said on an athletic team, one complainer can demoralize the entire team. They even used the word that one complainer can poison a group. Could one complainer demoralize an ecclesia? I don't know. Let's go on. The article listed 7 points, and I pause to remind you, these are not my ideas, all right? I'll tell you when the article ends, all right? 7 points. Number one, complaining is not a one-time event. What they're talking about is a chronic situation. It's the thing that is done over and over again. They're not talking about when somebody asks you for your opinion, somebody does a survey. They're not talking about a one-time problem where the faucet breaks and it needs to be fixed or the light bulb needs to be changed or whatever. They're not talking about those one-time problems, the flat tire. They're talking about that chronic complaining day after day, same thing over and over again. They're talking about that communication style. So number one was, they're talking about chronic problems. Number two, there was one expression, they said, that characterized most complaints. It's a repeated attitude. Something is wrong, and someone should do something about it. It's the someone, they said. And usually, they said that it's said with a degree of indignation. That means it's kind of a unique tone of voice when you say, something's wrong, and somebody ought to do something about it. Number three, there is almost always some truth in what they're complaining about. They're not wrong. This is an imperfect world. Number four, the complainer apparently believes that they are powerless to control what happens to them. They feel that everything that happens to them lies outside their control. Their efforts are insignificant, and if they try to do anything, it'd be totally thwarted by those in power. They feel that all the roadblocks and frustrations can only be removed by truly powerful ones. That's the someone that should do something about it. Number five, complainers are prescriptive. That comes from the word prescription. It's like you have a disease, the doctor writes a prescription to cure the disease. Prescription. Complainers are prescriptive. They know the solution. They know the prescription for every disease that can come up. They have a very strong image of the way things ought to be. And they have a galling sense of injustice. I'm still quoting. Number six. Still quoting. The complainer feels that he or she is perfect. It helps them appear blameless, innocent, morally perfect. First, they place the problem of the responsibility for the problem on someone else. And secondly, it's a comparison of their relative goodness versus the other person's badness. One more point. Number seven. Complainers are not problem solvers. Nothing productive comes from their complaining. Now, isn't that interesting? Some people think that murmuring is a valid method in the process of improvement. In other words, if I complain about this and complain about it and complain about it, finally something will get done. Study said it does not work that way. That when people complain and complain, they get some attention, but they almost never get action. The listeners react with impatience, a patronizing dismissal, and sadly, everyone tries to avoid the complainer. Nobody wants to be around someone who's complaining all the time. That's the end of the article. I could hardly believe it. If I hadn't read it in the book, I thought they were back in the class last Sunday. I thought they were at Chattanooga on Saturday. I thought they heard me at the Wednesday night meeting. It's a problem accepting it for ourselves. But there's a saying that I've heard recently. It said, don't blame the messenger for the message. Well, don't blame that book. Let's look at Israel, and let's examine those 7 points. The first one was the chronicity. Yes, with Israel, it was chronic. It was so chronic that it not only exhausted the patience of Moses, but if you can imagine, it was so bad it exhausted the patience of Jehovah. Jehovah would have never dealt with them so harshly if this only came up once in a while. Never. Number two, that someone should do something about it, that indignation. You know, that indignation was there when they referred to Egypt. They were saying to God that they thought they were better off when they were slaves. What an incredible insult to the salvation that they had been given. Number three. Yes, there was truth in what they said. They were hungry. They were thirsty. That was no lie. That water tasted horrible. Number four, the complainer feels powerless. Israel must have felt powerless. It never entered their minds that they could do something about it. Never entered their minds that they could dig a well. There was water out there in Sinai, the water table. Never entered their mind. Water tasted bad. They never thought for a minute, boil the water. They used herbs for absolutely everything. Never dreamed to them, put a few herbs in the water, make themselves an herb tea. No, they were powerless. They wanted Moses. They wanted God to give them better water. Number five, they were prescriptive. They knew the best idea. They knew the solution to absolutely everything. It wasn't just the water. No, then it was the food. And they got manna. They didn't like the manna. They wanted rotation diet. There wasn't enough variety. I think I heard that this week. With the Korah rebellion, and the problem with Miriam, they all knew exactly how to do everything better. Number six, they thought they were perfect. Number seven, there were no good results. There was nothing productive came of their complaining. If anything, it prolonged their agony. Prolonged it for 40 years. That's the story of natural Israel. Now, Jesus spoke about murmuring. And he used this word in Matthew, the 20th chapter. And this is one of our favorite parables. This is the parable, sometimes we call it of the 11th hour, sometimes we call it the parable of the denarius. This is the coin that was given to the workers. You remember, this is the workers in the vineyard. And all the workers received the same pay. Remember the story? Regardless of how long they worked. Some were hired in the morning. They probably worked a 12-hour day. They probably started at 6 o'clock in the morning. They worked all the way through to 6 o'clock at night. Remember the other group? Some were hired at 12, 3. Some were hired at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And the householder gave them the same pay. So this is an interesting parable for us. In verse 11, we see Jesus use the word murmured. That's why we find it interesting in this study. Now, we talk a lot about this parable, and we make some pretty sophisticated interpretations. We talk about, well, that one group is the beginning of the age, and the 5 o'clock is the end of the age. We say, well, there's the Pharisees are involved, and No, this group represents the Jewish nation, and then we bring in the fact that first shall be last and last shall be first. That's fine. But don't forget for a minute that Jesus has another lesson going on in this parable. He is talking about murmuring. Now the landowner, when he sees the reaction, you know, and we can understand the reaction of these workers. I like the Living Bible because it changes it into dollars. And it says that the one group working from morning to night made $25 for the day. They worked 12 hours and they got about $2 an hour. They worked all day. They worked in the heat of the sun. We're talking about a story we would say in the United States, it's migrant workers. $2 an hour. This other group pulls up in the bus at 5 o'clock, works for 1 hour, sun's already going down. He gave them $25. How would you feel? Well, they didn't feel good. And the landowner says in verse 15, when he sees the reaction, as we noted in verse 11, it says, they murmured Jesus' word. The landowner, when he sees their reaction in today's English, he says this, are you jealous because I am generous? Now, isn't that interesting? This is not a parable where Jesus says, draw your own conclusion. This is a parable where Jesus puts the words into the mouth of the landowner. He could have said to them, are you impatient? Don't you know that you will get a greater reward later on? He didn't say that. He used the word jealousy. He's talking about envy. He heard their murmuring, and Jesus said through the mouth of the landowner, are you jealous? There must be an incredibly strong connection between murmuring, complaining, and jealousy. Much complaining, much murmuring must be born of jealousy. You know, this, the one group, the group that's been there all day, they felt that they had 100% of what it required to get the top reward. Top reward was $25 in the story. They said, Lord, we have worked 100%. You're going to give the same reward to these people over here who worked 8%. Of what we did? I worked 100%, he worked 8%, and you're giving us the same reward? Now, we don't talk so much about hours worked amongst the Bible students. No, we translate it to things like attendance at Sunday meetings. Lord, I have 100% of the required attendance to get the highest reward. I go to all the Sunday meetings. You're going to give him the same reward as me when he goes to 8% of the meetings? Do you know what 8% is? That means he comes out once every 3 months. That's 8%. That's the same ratio as the parable. Lord, you're going to give him the same reward as me? I'm going to murmur if that happens. We translate into years in the truth. Lord, I've been immersed now for almost 30 years. This new brother here, 2-3 years, where was he in the old days? Where was he at Bowling Green? Where was he at Bloomington? You know, I've been around a long time, Lord. You're not going to give him the same reward, are you? You know what I'll do, Lord? So we go down the list. My understanding of chronology, yes, sir, 100%. Well, let me modify that. My understanding of chronology, I'm right up there, 95-98%. I got it down. I got all those numbers down. I got the dates down. I got the multiples down. I can do it any way you want, backwards, upside down, anything. This brother over here, I tell you, Lord, he's got about a 20% understanding of the chronology. 20%. Yes, he believes the Lord is present. A little bit fuzzy on 1914. Lord, you certainly wouldn't give him the same reward, would you? I'm going to get a better reward, aren't I, Lord? I don't know. That's what it seems to say to me. The problem is the murmuring. And the problem is leaving the reward up to the Lord. I think any time we talk about another group of laborers in the vineyard, and we imply that they're less qualified, we're murmuring. If we say that they're not qualified doctrinally, etc., that's a murmur. That was the parable of the coin. You know what the other side of the coin is? Thankfulness. Gratefulness. It's not forgetting what the Lord has done for us. There's an incredible account in Luke 17. The 11th through the 19th verses. Luke 17, 11 through 19. Only brethren, this one's not a parable. This is one true story. This is the story of the 10 lepers. You know, there's an incredible similarity in condition between leprosy and slavery. They're both pitiful conditions. They're degrading. They're sad. It's an unenviable lot. It's a physical, it's a social, a degradation. It's a curse. These 10 men were given their freedom from this incredible disease called leprosy. Did you know, as the Lord sent them off to see the priest, and as they walked, they could see those patches of ugly, diseased skin start to change. And they looked on the faces of their companions, and they could see the scars and the excoriated skin start to peel in. And this incredible disease that some of them had had for 40 years, for a lifetime, it was leaving. This was a miracle. And they were so excited. The 10 of them turned around and they ran back to Jesus. No, wait a minute. I made a mistake there. I got carried away. One of them turned around and was thankful enough and thoughtful enough to go back to Jesus. He was a Samaritan. The Jews considered him a dog. He was a Gentile dog. 90% of them, brethren, took the miracle, took the salvation, and went off. What are you doing with your salvation? Which direction are you going with the freedom and with the peace of mind that you have been given because you know the truth? Which direction? Same thing happens with Israel. You know, it was only Joshua and Caleb. And I kind of like that parallel because Caleb was a Gentile. And you know what the word Caleb means? It means dog. He was a dog too. Maybe the best example of gratefulness, thankfulness, was Jesus. If anybody had cause for murmuring, it was Jesus. Do you realize the ignorant people he was surrounded with? Ignorant, uneducated, crude people. They were people that were constantly seeking his demise, his death. They're following him around day and night. We can't imagine him complaining. Paul was a good example. Paul said to Timothy in 1 Timothy 6:6, "Godliness with contentment is great gain." It's interesting, if you have time to look at that chapter, Paul talks about money in that chapter. Now he's talking about this gain, and he says that the real gain in the Phillips translation, he says, some hope to make profit out of Christian religion. He's talking about money, and he uses a pun there. He says, there is real profit, of course. It is a peace of heart. And that's the contentment. If we have a peace of heart, there's no murmuring. So, do you know what makes people happy? They did that study. They found it wasn't in any group. They started to look at individuals, and they came to a conclusion. I mean, this is with all the sophistication of modern psychology, the PhDs, the scientists, the philosophers. They came to this incredible conclusion. Happiness comes from inside you. Doesn't matter if you have diabetes. Doesn't matter if you're going blind with glaucoma. Doesn't matter if you're illiterate or you've got a PhD. Doesn't matter if you can read and write Greek and Latin. If you're not happy, it's not because of any external circumstance. It's not because of where you live. It's not your ecclesia. It's not your relative. It's not your neighbor. It's not your friend. It's not your job. Happiness and contentment come from thanksgiving. A thankful Christian, a happy Christian, is a grateful Christian. It doesn't matter how we got to this present state. The important thing is that we have an influence over our present situation. We need to remove from our thinking phrases like, things never go right for me. Or the expression, I know this will never work. Or, we've tried that before. Or, why bother to put on another public meeting? Or, so you might say, we might as well expect the worst. The feeling of helplessness and hopelessness does not fit for those who have been spirit begotten and who have been justified. You've been called to the high calling. You have received a justification, a standing of righteousness. 1 Corinthians 7:17. Philip says, each man should live his life with the gifts that the Lord has given him and in the condition in which God has called him. That's contentment. Spiritual Israel, what can we say about those seven things? We're talking about the repeated complaint. It's the same comment over again. Oh, the convention is always this way. The food is always terrible. The children are always noisy, misbehaving. The deacons never do what they're supposed to do. Did you hear that always and never? That's the sign of the chronic complaining. Always, always, never, never. Secondly, there's the indignation. If you hear that creeping into the voice, that tone of voice, that indignant, that insistent, it goes up, there's an urgency. That's just like Israel saying, we wish we were back in Egypt. It's an insult to the gifts that we have received. Number three was that there's truth in it. Yes. Yes. There's plenty of truth in it. Yes, the committee could have done a better job. Yes, the deacons could have done a better job. Yes, the children are noisy. Yes, the food is, pretty bad. None of this validates the method. It's so interesting that the complaints of Israel were all true. They were hungry. True. fact. Truth. The water was bad. Truth. You know, we talk so much about striving for the truth. We will argue day and night about the truth. We want to defend the truth. We will divide ecclesias because of the truth. Because of facts. Do you hear what this is saying? Yes, the water was bad. That did not validate the murmuring. It did not make the murmuring acceptable in God's perspective. There was actually something he wanted more than the truth. If he wanted to know if the water was bad, he could have had a robot. They have robots that can test water. That's not what he was looking for. He was looking for a living human being that knew more than just truth versus non-truth. He wanted something from the human being that was intangible, that a robot could not do. He wanted something that would be appreciative, would be grateful. Number four. Powerless? Are we powerless? Do we consider ourselves powerless? No, not with the Holy Spirit. We know that in 2 Timothy, that great scripture that says, we have not been given the spirit of fear, but of power. It's through the Holy Spirit. There's always something you can do. If you can't get the ecclesia to do the witnessing, do it yourself. It's a smaller scale, but do it yourself. Number five, it's the part about being prescriptive. Yes, we feel we know how things should go. We could run it better, we could do it better, we could play it better, we could lead it better, we could say it better. But we don't know all the details of the situation. We don't know what the other person went through. Number six is the one on perfection. No comment. Number seven, it's sad. Number seven, there's no result. The most frequent result is that the people avoid the complainer. If we feel that a change needs to be effected, the first order of business is to pray about it. Second order of business is to bring it up to a small group. Test the idea if you think it's such a good idea. Don't try to sell them on the idea, just ask them what they think. If you get some approval, then go to the ecclesia. But if the ecclesia or any of these reject the idea, then accept it, that it's not for that time or place. Try again a little later. And then finally, if nobody likes the idea, step number four, forget it. Those who are in a position of either eldership or leadership, the committees, you're in charge of something, you will hear more murmuring than the average, just like most. Accept it as part of your job description. But try to avoid the technique yourself. Don't get trapped into counter-murmuring. You know, the murmur is a low-level sound. It's like a hum. When a doctor places a stethoscope over the heart and he hears a murmur instead of the beat, that's what they call it, a heart murmur.